So you played a lot of remarkable roles over the years, and one of the things that I like about your work is that you've always portrayed a role in which a black man has a sense of honor, pride, and justice. Yet you received your Academy Award for Training Day, in which you played a corrupt cop and villain. And I know personally that kind of upset me, because you know, his brother has done so much good work, and he gets it for being back.
Right.
What are your thoughts on that?
You're probably too young. So actually, the first Academy Award I won was for Glory. You know, the Academy Awards sometime are the body of work awards. I was up for the an Academy Award for Malcolm X, and I was up against an Italian American actor by the name of Al Pacino. Al Pacino was up for his 8th Academy Award nomination and had never won. I was up for my 3rd at that time, and I had already won. I voted for Al Pacino. I did. And I didn't think Sand of a Woman was his best film, best performance by far. But I did not, nor did it, I guess anyone else that year, want Al Pacino to go over 8. So sometimes, and I'm being nice, sometimes you're recognized, sometimes it is a makeup award. Sometimes it's a body of work award. Most people in Hollywood thought I was going to win for the Hurricane. So some would argue, and that was 2 years prior, some would argue that this was the makeup award. Training Day was the makeup award. And I think also Training Day people were shocked. They were like, wow, we didn't know he could do that. In fact, that goes closer to me than any other. That was the easiest role I played, actually. It really was. Yes.
Just a couple more short questions, students, and then maybe one from faculty.
Oh, okay.
You spoke a moment ago about some of the obstacles that you wanted the young actors to portray, you know, how that spoke to the audience. What are some of the obstacles that you've overcome that have brought you to where you are? Do you draw on that at all?
You know, it's interesting because people say, wow, you know, you've played all these great men. I've only actually done 6 films out of 35 that are about real people, but they were very strong people, like Ruben Hurricane Carter, Stephen Biko, Malcolm X, Mel Tosin. So people remember that, but it's actually only 6, I believe. Overcoming nights, like the night I sat in the audience for the Hurricane, you know, because it was like, oh, okay, this is, it was a bitter pill to swallow. I've been blessed in so many ways. I don't have any sad story about what I overcame. I'm a positive thinker. I did not understand the concept in college of falling back. They said, well, you need something to fall back on. That never registered to me. If I fall anywhere, I'm going to fall forward. I'm going to see what I'm going to hit. So I've just always been that kind of thinker. I don't have any really any sad story of what I've overcome. I just keep moving, you know. And I felt that way before I had 2 nickels to rub together. And I feel that way now. Yes, sir.
My name is Escort Johnson. I'm a freshman here as well. Almost as a segue off the Marcus question that I asked. Your role in Trinity as well as in most recently American Dad, mm-hmm. you've been back to this, are kind of like on scene as 2 of your strongest roles. And is debatable as to whether the moral of right of these men are something that should be held in kind of a conflict, like if you have their own negative themes, mm-hmm. so to speak. Mm-hmm. And I was just wondering, what qualms do you have personally when portraying these roles? Do you think that you have the responsibility to your audience to kind of like almost turn it down or to this?
No, I'm very selfish. I do what I want to do. I don't care what you think. I really don't, because I don't think you can operate that way. I don't think you can operate in life that way. I think the universal stems from the specific. If I'm in the cup-making business, I make the best cup I can make, and I set it on the table. I'm not going to go around the room and ask everybody, what do you think about it? Well, by the time you finish, you know, what are you going to end up with? You please everybody and please nobody. Frank Lucas is a brilliant man. He was a terrible, awful human being, and I told him that. Frank Lucas was 6 years old when he watched his cousin get his head blown off because he had recklessly eyeballed a white woman. a white girl. He was six, scarred him for life. His father went after the guys who killed his cousin and did some damage to one of them. He had to escape from leave North Carolina. Frank was the oldest. At 6 years old, they was dirt poor, shared property, no money. He started to steal. He stole the chicken so that they could eat. Then it became a pig. Then it became robbing someone. Then he moved right on up the line. And at 15, he had to leave North Carolina, went to New York, and meets the most notorious gangster in the history of Harlem, Bumpy Johnson. So he got his master's degree from Bumpy Johnson and his doctorate, never spent a day in school. And his son now, his 13-year-old son, is brilliant. He's getting an education. He's heading in another direction, might end up here. That's the point of this film. You can end up in the field, you can end up a Frank Lucas without education, with your role here. You could very well end up being a Frank Lucas. So I don't, you know, at the same time, I've done both movies. You know, I'm like, here's some of this, and then here's some of that. I'm not saying what Frank Lucas did was you know, it was awful. It was awful. And I was the first one to tell him that. He's like, well, you're gonna get an Oscar. I'm not here for that, Frank. You know, the point is that you destroyed many lives and you paid the price for it. What I wanted to see more in the film and what I injected into Training Day as well was more of how he paid for it. In fact, he's paying with his own body. He has an awful, an osteoporosis. He can't stand, fall over. He got a 15-year sentence behind bars and a life sentence. Since Training Day at the end of the film, as was written, they didn't even want the character to die. I rewrote the end of Training Day where he gets blown up, where everybody in the neighborhood leaves him, where he gets, you know, I had Ethan Hawke hit me and I wanted to fall on the ground, crawl like a snake. I put all of that in because the only way I could justify living in the worst, the character living in the worst way is that he dies in the worst way. So, anyway. Yes, sir.
Come back. Mr. David L. Evans.
Yes, sir. How are you, sir?
Two things here. We are a visual society, unfortunately, today. And U.S. history of the last 60 or 70 years is poorly taught in our school. So I'm asking, because this taught a lesson most of us didn't know about while in college, are there other films in the making that might be able to teach these little snippets of U.S. history?
Could be. I mean, I'm sure there are, and hopefully, so go tell all your mama and daddy, because everybody go to the movies. Support it. Don't just support American gangsters. Support films like this, because it is called show business. And if you don't go, they won't make it up. Now, I guarantee you, if this movie is a big hit, there'll be 90 debate movies next year. There'll be lining up every little story, you know. That's the nature of the business. You know, it was interesting, at that time, it's like Mel Tolson went to Columbia. Many of the professors that went to Ivy League schools, African-American professors at that time, could not teach at those schools, unlike today, obviously. So they went back south. And they taught at these quote-unquote historically black colleges, like Wiley. So it was really a great laboratory. Only 360 students, these brilliant professors. So, you know, my wife is here, and her father ran one of the top high schools in North Carolina from, I don't know, 30s, 40s, 50s, 60s. And he made a statement that I found very interesting. He said, you know, integration was the worst thing that happened to my school. I said, well, what do you mean? He said, well, they took my best teachers and my best students, and they spread them all out. I was like, wow, I never thought of it that way. So it was a unique situation in those days that to have these schools with these brilliant professors in small schools.
Yes? You know what? I'm going to take one more quick question because we have this plane literally on the run.
I got to go to New York.
And I'll take a quick question with a short answer, because we have a presentation.
And a short answer, yes. Yes.
Yes.
You know, and especially in the first scene with the pig farmer, to me, I was 9 years old. I was in Florida at a motel in Daytona Beach with
my mother, my brother and I were out on the balcony. And these two white guys walked past me. And I was like, not even so much what they said, but just the anger that they spewed. And I went inside and I asked my mother, I'm like, what's wrong with them? They don't even know me. Why are they? She said, that's somebody who's worried about you taking their place. So I understood from that comment, and since it's as much economic or cultural or class, I should say, as it is race. So in that pig farmer scene, you know, it was important for me to inject him saying, I'll endorse the check over to you, and the guys will do what? You know, because they don't do it. Wait a minute, what does that mean? You know, now they got to get a leg up on him. I didn't want it to just be about race. And the other thing I did, I made it conscious of it to do, without trying to be too on the nose, were to put children in those scenes. So I put the white farmer's kids, so they're looking at them. The black kids are looking at them. The white kids are looking at how their father operates. They're looking at how this black man operates. The kids are looking at each other. When we shot that hanging scene, there was a picture, I forgot the name of the book, but there was a picture of a man who had been hung and who his arms were tied behind him like we had, and he had collapsed into the fire, just the rope had broken or whatever, and it was an awful picture. And of course, in a lot of these photos, as you probably well know, people are smiling and taking pictures. And they had the children up front.
Hammond, Indiana, 1931.
There you are, Hammond, Indiana, 1931. So we had, I wanted children at this hanging. And there was one child, and I told him at the last time, I said, you know what, just turn around and face the body. So when we crane down, he's learning. He's being taught. He's getting prepared. Unfortunately, and interestingly enough, Oprah Winfrey and I are on the cover of Ebony magazine this month, January 2008. I don't know if it's out yet. It is out. And on the cover, in the corner of the article, of the front page of the magazine, is an article about the noose and its return. And I said, wow. Yeah. Hopefully the difference is that that's news now. That's exceptional. In 1935, it wasn't even news. All right, I'll shut up.
I want to say what a privilege it is to know this man, to know him as a brilliant actor, a great stage and screen actor, a wonderful human being. I've had the privilege of worshiping with him, knowing him, and I have admired him forever. I can't tell you of a person with greater integrity than this man. And you can never know what to present him. You know, what to present him. So I was sitting just last week at the Nobel festivities in Stockholm.
I know. Always good.
I know. And I was talking about him to the head of the Nobel Academy, and we were chatting about what could I give him, and you have great admirers there. So while I couldn't get you a Nobel Prize, there is a medal of Alfred Nobel, and it's a real Alfred Nobel medal, directly sent to you from Sweden at the Karolinska Nobel Institute. And we have 25 gold Nobel medals for Denzel Washington, brought from Stockholm. Here you are.
Wow.